everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of the SmackDown Summary. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm joined here, as always, by Sondra. I am severely jet-lagged from my trip to Canada, so it's like 2:55 a.m. right now, and I feel like it's like 7 p.m., but I know I need to go to bed by like 5, or I'll be fucked for the rest of the week. But we're here to talk about SmackDown.
The life and trials of Skybox Kenny McIntosh and your jet-setting life.
If only we could talk about what we just talked about off air, about what happened. Like, that would be quite funny, but I can't, obviously.
You big tease,
life is random.
Life is very random.
But it's a fun random, not a negative one. But Sondra, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm also fairly tired today, but for no real reason, except I just drank like a huge thing of coffee, so now I might be kind of wired. Who knows? We'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. My sister-in-law is about to have a baby, so that's really exciting. Like,
congratulations to Auntie Sondra.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked.
So, would that make him Uncle Mr. Sondra?
Yep, Uncle Mr. Sondra. I think that's going to be his official title.
Good, good. Let's keep it that way. So, we are going to talk about SmackDown leading towards No Mercy, the second SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view. Which kind of feels weird that they're already building to the second one when Raw hasn't even had their first one yet. But
yeah, it's strange. It feels like it's coming up real soon. I actually had to Google today, like, when is that happening? I'm sure that they told me plenty of times on the show, but I wasn't paying attention or something.
It's like 2.5 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's coming up really soon because there's going to be the Raw one. Clash of Champions is this weekend, and then there's a weekend off, and then there's another pay-per-view. So it's basically like every other week we have pay-per-views going on, which is crazy. And then it's Survivor Series after that, so that'll be a joint one that I assume will be 12 hours long to accommodate all the title matches.
Which will be fun, though, because like we're going to have, you know, TakeOver Toronto, which I mean, I'm excited because like Toronto used to be such a big wrestling town. You know, two WrestleManias there in the past.
I wish they'd hold WrestleMania there again. I'm just saying. Like, it's a 5-hour drive.
Yeah, please do it there. Although, it's like, it's funny because, like, WrestleMania is always, you know, it's like the Sky Dome. And you're like, oh, that sounds amazing. And now it's the Rogers Center. Fuck off. It's like the shittest name. Like, how epic does the Sky Dome sound?
The Sky Dome sounds amazing. The Rogers Center is just, hey, our shite phone service paid for an arena.
Well, bearing in mind that, like, if like an old term in like British humor is like rogering someone is like shagging them. So the Rogers Center sounds like the shagging center.
That's amazing.
Anyway, away from my weird British humor. Sondra, before we begin, I do want to ask you a question because I asked this to David in the Raw Rundown and I thought it would be fun to give you the chance to put your perspective in because I think your answers will be very different.
Okay, I have no idea where this is going.
So I was talking to David about how I love American TV shows. Like, okay. I think there's a lot of great TV shows. I was really a big fan of The People versus O.J. Simpson and Stranger Things and Making a Murderer and all these great shows. And I was watching the Emmys and I was asking David to just name a few shows that he watched that he could recommend to the listeners. So, you know, we've got a few thousand people that listen to this podcast. So are there any couple of shows that you watch that you would recommend that people check out?
Orphan Black is number one. Watch Orphan Black. It's so good. They're going to be entering their fifth season next year. It's like way too far away because it's one of those shows that does like 10 episodes and then is done for a year, right? Like a lot of shows are doing that now.
So what's the premise of that show?
The premise of that show is that it starts out with a girl who sees someone who looks exactly like herself and she sees that person commit suicide and you find out like, you can't say too much about it without spoiling some of the stuff, but basically it's a bunch of clones and they have to kind of figure out like who's cloning them and what's going on and things get even like trickier. But there's also really great character drama stuff like between what they call the sisters, like all of the different clone girls. And plus, if you want to see a masterclass in acting, Tatiana Maslany plays all of these different clones and she just won an Emmy for best outstanding actress or whatever. And I nearly cried when I saw that she actually finally won an Emmy for it, because she plays each of these women and one man to perfection. And they're all so different and they're all so unique, to the point where sometimes I forget that she's the same actress playing multiple people, because I'm like, oh, Allison looks nothing like Sarah. Oh, wait, they're the exact same human.
So Orphan Black is one that was also very dear to Bob's heart. This is the thing that's weird, is there's a lot of you who are listening to this who are very new listeners to Inside the Ropes. So I feel like we should explain this quite quickly.
Yeah, we do reference him sometimes, and I kind of forget sometimes that so many people are new listeners and wouldn't have been around when he was around.
Yeah, and I think what we should maybe do is, because you've got all the NXT rundowns that you guys did together, maybe we can put a couple of the best episodes up on YouTube for people to listen to. That'd be quite fun.
Yeah, sure.
So basically what happened was, about 3 years ago, Robert and I were hosting Inside the Ropes. Just the two of us, we had no extra people coming on or anything. And Sandra started listening, and we used to do live podcasts, and we would have interaction on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheInsideNetwork.
Give us a like and join the conversation.
Exactly, which we should do more of, but I'm logging on, but I'll try. Sandra started listening to the show and started posting, and if you know Sandra, she posts lengthy posts. And whether you agree with Sandra or not, which we've noticed in the last couple of weeks, there is divisiveness in that.
It's been very interesting having people validate my wrestling fandom on Twitter while I'm at work.
But she was always very eloquent in her writings. And Bob DeGrand was his name, was this guy from New Jersey, Hoboken, New Jersey, I think it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. And he was a man, I think in his mid-60s,
I want to say. I think he was like 62 when he died, I want to say.
Okay, so early 60s then.
Yeah.
And he
I could
was
be
like
wrong. I apologize if that's wrong.
And he was like a wrestling fan who grew up in New York. He used to go to Madison Square Garden shows. He used to see Bruno Sammartino. And he had one of the best radio voices of all time, because he used to host a podcast about Dexter called The Dexter Cast. And I sort of listened to it just one day, because I was like, I wonder what Bob sounds like. And he was just a listener at that point to Inside the Ropes. And I heard his voice and just fell in love with it. And I was like, Robert, we need to get Bob to do something. And he was like, oh, what do you want to do? And so we came up with the idea of an NXT review show, because NXT was starting to become bigger for most wrestling fans. So we thought it'd be good to have Bob cover that with somebody. And then we thought of Sandra. So we thought, what we'll do is we'll get them to do a test episode and see how they go. We were terrified, if it was bad, how we were going to have to say thanks but no thanks. And luckily,
they didn't tell
Sandra,
us that it was a test episode, by the way. They were like, yeah, start doing this show. It'll be a great idea.
Maybe that's how you'd recall it. So they recorded it. They were very, very good. And they started doing the show. And this would have been the summer of 2013, if I remember correctly.
2014, actually. It was July 2014.
Summer of 2014. And then, so Sandra and Bob would do an NXT review show every single week. And in January of 2015, I remember it was a weekend. I was in Vancouver because I was living there at the time. And Sandra, Bob, and I all recorded an episode of the main show because Robert was busy that weekend. And we talked about like Wrestle Kingdom and all these different things.
And TNA. It was the first time I'd ever watched TNA.
Yes, you had watched TNA. And then Bob died. Bob passed away a couple of days later. And it was really sad, and we were really sad about it. And Sandra was kind of at a loss because she had this NXT show, and all of a sudden Bob was gone, and who was going to do it? And she had various people come in and do the shows with her and stuff. And then obviously it's morphed into Sandra now doing the SmackDown show and different things. But so we referenced Bob a fair bit, and that's who he was.
He was my first co-host. Like, I never even spoke to you or Robert for, I think, like months after Bob and I started recording together. Or at least it was a while before we actually spoke. And it was bizarre because it was like, huh, I've listened to you talk and you've listened to me talk. And now we're having an actual conversation. And obviously now we talk all the time. But yeah, like Bob was really, really great. And I think the cool thing, and one of the things I miss the most actually, is being able to ask him about stuff that happened in the past, like from someone who wasn't a kid at the time, because like you and Robert and David and I are all the same age. Bob was not our age, so he grew up watching Bruno Sammartino and whatnot. So getting his take on things like, you know, how he felt about what The Undertaker did at certain points in time or whatever would be really cool, because he wasn't at the same stage in life as you guys were when you were watching it. You know what I mean? So it was always interesting because he was such a long-term fan who also was so focused on the future of wrestling. Like, the reason that the two of us got on so well was because, you know, we were always kind of the NXT advocates anyway when we would post, you know, written stuff to the Inside the Ropes Facebook. And that's, you know, why you reached out to us to start the show. It was like, okay, these two are, you know, mental about NXT. We can just give them a show. Let them talk about it. It'll be fine. Like, they can get it out of their system and we can have a VIP thing about it. So, yeah, like, that's the history of how I came to Inside the Ropes.
There you go, yeah, and that's and yeah, but it was very, very sad when Bob died. But what we like to do is give him shit for dying on us.
Yeah,
that's
jerk.
What we like to do. Dickhead that he is. So
we're always like, you asshole, why'd you have to go and die on us? Leaving me without a co-host. And that's why I tell you and Robert and David, like, none of you are allowed to die, because it's already happened once. I don't need to be sitting there waiting to record a show and then find out one of you is dead too.
I do still think that the winter of 2014 Raws may have killed Bob, because they were so bad.
I blame Mojo Rawley.
Now this should not be funny, and I can tell this story because I don't really think anybody who's associated with it, maybe one, but not that many people are going to listen to this. I was introduced to something when Bob died that I never knew was a thing, and Sondra attended this. I think I briefly attended it, very briefly, but felt very uncomfortable with the whole thing. So Bob had a lot of acquaintances on the internet. He did podcasts and different things on Dexter, Orphan Black, wrestling, blah, blah, blah. And when he died, some of the people that had done podcasts with him invited me to a Google funeral.
That was a thing.
Baffled. I was baffled.
You were so uncomfortable. It was so funny.
Well, it was a Google funeral.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like death for Starbucks. I don't know what was going on. I just had no idea what to do. So yeah, there you go. Anyway, SmackDown. So
SmackDown.
Daniel Bryan comes out and says we're going to have the first ever SmackDown Women's Championship contract signing with Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss. So they have a contract signing for No Mercy. They go back and forth quite a bit. You know, Becky talks about Alexa Bliss preparing for a pageant while she prepares for fights. Alexa Bliss said that Becky's not a good fit to be champion, and then Becky went into this kind of long response about how she wasn't born to be champion, but she was born to be, you know, living in a small house in Ireland and having a job she didn't like, but she fought hard to become a champion, and she wants it more than Alexa Bliss does. And if Alexa tries to take it, she'll rip her head off. Bliss ended up smacking Becky with the clipboard of the contract signing and then flipping the table over on Becky. But then when she tries to leave, Becky just goes mental and runs after her and starts trying to beat her up. And they showed some good passion and aggression for this match. What did you think of this as an opener and as a beginning to build towards No Mercy for them?
I'm really enjoying that the women are getting to open the show so regularly now on both Raw and SmackDown. I think it's very cool because a lot of times that's saved for, you know, the most important feud or, you know, something that we're trying to get across as important and a real thing. And it's starting to become kind of normal. Not that they have to open the show every single week, but it's not
when it makes sense.
It's not so jarring that it happens anymore, right? Like, when women first started main eventing NXT shows, like just television shows, it was so crazy. It was like, women are in the main event, women are in the main event. And now it's kind of like, well, of course the women are in the main event because they're important and sometimes they're going to main event. Like, Asuka's going to main event something. That's obviously, like, that's just normal. And it's starting to become normal that the women's feuds are being treated with care and they're being allowed to be characters and whatnot. What I really like about this is that I think Becky is the best babyface on SmackDown. And I think it's remarkable that they're actually booking a babyface properly. Because WWE is terrible at having babyface characters, right? Because mostly everybody is catty and unlikable. And not just the women. Like, they have a problem booking male babyfaces, too. I mean, look at Dean Ambrose right now. Or look at, I mean, is Seth Rollins even a babyface on Raw? Does anybody know? I'm not sure. Like, Becky is showing great fire and saying, I mean, I loved her line where she said, no, I wasn't born to be a champion. I fought to be a champion. And that sort of just encapsulates what Becky Lynch is about, right? Like, she wants to fight. And she, you know, she says to Alexa, you know, instead of preparing for a pageant, I was preparing for a fight. And I think the dynamic between the two of them is exactly what I wanted it to be. Because I like Alexa thinking that she's superior. I mean, she hasn't really shown on SmackDown a lot of, like, why she can be superior. But if you know Alexa Bliss's history, she has competed in, like, fitness competitions and cheer and gymnastics and all sorts of stuff since she was 5 years old. She's been winning titles and winning trophies and winning stuff, right? And so that's her attitude. And that's why she's like, no, I was born to be a champion and I'm supposed to be here. And the great thing about it, right, is that Alexa Bliss, heel-ass Alexa Bliss, was totally opportunistic in even getting the number one contendership in the first place, because they show Carmella super kicking Nikki Bella and then Alexa Bliss taking the pin off of that. So she didn't even hit her own finisher to get this opportunity, but still believes that she is totally deserving and totally deserves to be in the spotlight. And I really like the dynamic of it. And I think they executed it really well too. Like, I think both Alexa Bliss and Becky Lynch are pretty good at talking and having these conversations and whatnot. I mean, some of the dialogue was cheesy, sure, because the dialogue's always going to be cheesy in these kinds of things, right? But I think it got across what it needed to get across. And I was into this feud already, but I like seeing the interplay between the two of them. My only issue is I'm not sure why we're having a contract signing, what is it, like 2 weeks before the pay-per-view? Like 3 weeks before the pay-per-view? We just said when the pay-per-view is, and I'm bad at counting. But it seems really early for this, because now what do we do until then? It was like when we crowned the number one contender, or when they made the six-pack challenge thing official for the next pay-per-view, and then we had weeks of television to fill. Like, what else do you do? So I'm not sure how they're, I mean, obviously that's up to them to decide how to tell the story from now on, but it just seems early for this kind of contract signing. And there were, like, the main event on the show too seemed almost like they were building to the pay-per-view and not 2 weeks before the pay-per-view. But yeah, I guess that's kind of a minor quibble.
I really enjoyed this. I thought Becky was great. She does a lot better in promos than I thought she would in these situations, which is good. I think I'd like to see Alexa Bliss look a little bit more mean. Like, sometimes I don't quite believe that she is as mean as she is. And I don't know what that is. Maybe that's just, you know, because there is a thing where, like, if you're given a scripted promo, it does take time to kind of get your bearings of doing them in front of a live, you know, 10,000 of that. But I thought she did a really good job with her end of it, and it made me want to see the match. So good job. And I don't think that Alexa Bliss has really got a chance of winning the belt, because I think it would be a disastrous mistake to take the belt off Becky after a month, but or 2 weeks. But I think that if they can at least in the match get me to think for one moment that she might win it, then they've done their job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I don't think Alexa Bliss will win the title here. I don't think they're going to want to hotshot it around like that. And I don't think Alexa Bliss is at that level, but I do believe her as a contender, and I think she's a really good first title defense for Becky. So
she's the perfect choice. She is definitely the perfect choice.
Did like when Alexa, like when Becky was telling her whole story and getting all fired up, and Alexa just kind of stands there looking kind of demure, like, oh, wow, you told me off, and then just goes, wow, that was so inspirational. Give me a break, or whatever. I think Alexa's facial expressions are on point, and I love them, and I could just screen cap her face forever, which sounds kind of weird now that I say it out loud.
Kind of creepy.
But, I mean, if you need still photos to convey emotion, Alexa Bliss is your girl. She's so great.
Then we got The Miz, the glory of The Miz, running into Daniel Bryan, complained about his match with Dolph Ziggler tonight. And then basically, the long story short is Bryan said that in the new contract, he agreed to the IC title match. So Miz had no choice but to accept it. But we should get to that in just a little bit. The Usos made their entrance out. I really like their new outfits.
Wait, wasn't this when Daniel Bryan was like, if you don't fight, then we renegotiate, or then your contract is done, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. But I was going to just kind of, I was going to kind of loop it all into the match.
Well, the only thing I have to say about that is that the first time I watched through this, I wasn't paying proper attention to that segment. So in my head, it was, if you don't, like, if you don't fight, or if you lose the belt, then you're gone. So I was like, what is going on? But I rewatched it back and was like, oh, okay, it wasn't as severe as I thought it was.
Yes, but it was, you know, they're keeping the story going. So, really like the Usos' new outfits, and I think this is the right one to go with. I like their new attitude. I'm really digging the Usos right now, I'll be honest. And they had a match with American Alpha, who are back, and American Alpha are out to prove a point. Usos get revenge for what happened to them a couple of weeks ago in the semi-finals of the tag team tournament. But in the end, Jimmy Uso ended up facing Jordan with a super kick, and then it kind of all got a bit schmozzy. But in the end, there was a double super kick on Jason Jordan, and the Usos won the match. They beat American Alpha. I was surprised that they pinned Jordan on that one. What did you think of this one?
I liked it too. I really did. I expected the Usos to win, actually. I did. Like, I was kind of... I'm obviously going to be rooting for American Alpha, but it makes more sense to me for the Usos to win this first, you know, this first go-around at the tag team titles so that they can fight Heath Slater and Baby Rhino and probably beat Heath Slater and Baby Rhino. And then set up, you know, an ongoing thing with American Alpha so that American Alpha has to kind of come from behind and chase the title and whatnot. Because even though I've seen American Alpha plenty of times in NXT and seen kind of their rise to the title, which they didn't even hold the NXT tag titles very long before the Revival got them back, seeing American Alpha so long in NXT, I sometimes have to remember that they're still very new to the main roster. And so I have to remember that they're still very new to the main roster and that people kind of need to get acquainted with them. And I think they're doing a really good job of building sympathy for American Alpha right now, because Chad Gable was still hurt coming into this match, right? So it wasn't like
he came back too soon almost.
Yeah, like he came back too soon almost. And so there was a lot of sympathy for him going into it because it was like, oh man, is he back too soon? What's going on? And then the Usos, you know, were smart. I like the dastardly heel Usos targeting his knee some more and, you know, being dickheads about it and hurting him. And then it ends up that Chad Gable's injury does cost them the match, because I really liked the way they finished it too, with Jason Jordan almost tagging in Chad Gable, but thinking better of it because he wants to protect his partner and his friend. And then that kind of ends up costing him because he was in the match for too long and couldn't tag out. And then Chad Gable couldn't break it up. Like, Chad Gable was crawling toward them to break it up as he, you know, as the pin was happening. So it wasn't like Chad Gable was just not paying attention or anything. I liked the way the whole thing played out. And I think the Usos seemed very dastardly. And I dug it. I think it's good. The Usos are a lot more interesting right now. And that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, I'm really into the Usos right now. I think they're a great heel tag team. And after the match, during the match, we got, I can only imagine how much this made you squeal with excitement, but we did get Rhino and Heath Slater backstage watching the match.
Yes.
And as they were watching the match, Heath Slater was putting the cheese onto Rhino's crackers. That is not a euphemism. That is what was happening.
Nope, it was actually happening. Return of Easy Cheese on SmackDown. I legitimately almost went out and bought some. It just sounds so good.
Horrendous. And so the Usos go backstage after it. And this is what I liked, is the Usos came in pissed off because they think they should be tag team champions. They're annoyed at the joke that is Heath Slater and Rhino. You know, for them, it's not funny. And I kind of like that. I like that the Usos are taking it seriously. And then Rhino was sort of, you know, taking offense to the Usos. And
well, the Usos were like, give us your crackers. And he was like, you're not going to touch my crackers.
Yes, the threatening language was loose, but it was
I really like the dynamic between Heath Slater and Rhino right now. I think they're great because Rhino just looks like he's disaffected and doesn't care and is just sort of there eating crackers. But when push comes to shove and people threaten him, or when people threaten Heath Slater and his kids, because they said something about your 27 raggedy-ass kids or something, that was when Rhino, like, he scrunched up the crackers and kind of threw the crumbs at the Usos and got between them and Heath Slater and was like, no, this is my tag team partner we're talking about. So he does care for Heath Slater. Yeah. I'm just saying.
there is definitely an element of love there as well as hate.
And so easy, I guess, cheese.
An easy cheese, which, you know, maybe Rhino and Heath Slater will become the spokesman for easy cheese.
Wouldn't that be great?
It would be something. So I guess we're going to get Heath Slater and Rhino and the Usos at the pay-per-view, which should be fun. I think the Heath Slater and Rhino are definitely going to be short-term champions, for sure. But I wouldn't mind if it stretches another month with Heath Slater and Rhino. That'd be cool. That'd be fine.
I'd be fine either way. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Usos end up, you know, getting the titles and then starting something with American Alpha instead. But we'll see.
I mean, the Usos should get the titles long-term, but
yeah,
I guess we'll see. Then we got, I'm going to be brutally honest with you, I fast-forwarded something for the first time during anything of these draft shows. I was not watching Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin again. like I'm hand on heart giving up with that. I don't care.
But you missed Jack Swagger on commentary.
Well, you know, that's the price you need to pay. I saw the confrontation post-match. That didn't do much for me either. But if there's anything you want to say about it, I just couldn't have given a shit.
Baron Corbin versus Apollo Crews was a good match. It was the same match, basically, that we've seen. And poor Apollo Crews at this point, like, he's supposed to be the guy with all the tools who has no personality and just smiles. And he wasn't spelling anything today, so that was disappointing.
So his one method of charisma for you.
Yeah, well, because it's the one thing he does other than smile. And Apollo Crews is starting to look kind of pissed off about this whole situation, which I like. You know, like, that's something that I do like, because he is starting to be like, no, I'm tired of this. Like, you're picking on me and everything. But then he just keeps losing, too, which isn't super great to build him as a thing, right? And putting Jack Swagger on commentary is just an odd choice, because speaking is not Jack Swagger's strong point. But I will say it wasn't so bad, because he didn't talk a whole lot. Oh, I just remembered a commentary thing that I meant to say during the Usos thing. Can we go back to that?
Mm-hmm.
David Otunga is so bad, right? And we know this. But here's an example of why David Otunga is so bad. He mentions at least 3 times, oh yeah, I'm filming a movie with Adam Sandler and I ran into the Usos' dad, Rikishi, and I asked him what's up with the twins. Rikishi told me on the set of the Adam Sandler movie I'm filming what was going on with his sons.
He did tell that story 3 times.
He told it 3 times, but did he ever tell us what was going on with the Usos? No. Was Although there a payoff to this story? No. Was it name-dropping, like, hey, I met Rikishi? Yes, that's all it was.
The funny thing is that, obviously, just to kind of break the fourth wall, I'm recording this immediately after recording the Raw Rundown with David, and a guy on Twitter called John Jinx tweeted me today saying, is David ever going to tell his Usos story about their new attitude? Blah, 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 blah. So I thought that he meant David McCutcheon. So I said to David, I was like, by the way, I need you to tell that Usos story today, because apparently I've cut you off twice for it. And he was like, what? What Usos story? And I was like, I don't know. And he was like, why would I be talking about the Usos? We talk about Raw. And I had to go back and I was like, oh, the guy meant Otunga.
Okay. Right, yeah.
But David Otunga also said on SmackDown, I think it was during the Miz and Dolph Ziggler match, he said, I can't believe a man would use his wife to get ahead. This is David Otunga, the husband of Jennifer Hudson.
Oh my goodness. Whose entire character when he came in, like on NXT and on, you know, in the Nexus, whatever, his entire thing was, I'm the A-list, David Otunga, my fiance, Jennifer Hudson. He could not stop talking about Jennifer Hudson. He could not stop talking about his wife. And I'm just waiting for the day, like, this comes up during, you know, talking about Miz and Dolph Ziggler, how Miz is such an A-lister, and I'm just waiting for the day that David Otunga gets fed up and goes, I was the entire A-list once. Because it always infuriated me that he was like, I'm the A-list, David Otunga. Like, you're a list of one. Shut up.
Poor Otungs. Kurt Hawkins did some backstage impressions and said that told SmackDown it was time to face the facts.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see if he's ever going to bring the facts to SmackDown physically.
I hope so soon, because I want this to keep escalating, but I want it to escalate with him in the ring. Like,
well, you also want people to be eventually like, right, well, Sondra loves this. Can we see something more of it now? So yeah. That people could I do think it's going to be one of those things. It's going to be like a Marmite thing. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to think it's crap. It's going to be a divisive thing. But, you know, it's at least his personality. Naomi and Nikki were backstage. Naomi was going on about the glow that she brings to SmackDown. And then Nikki Bella was talking about
confidence in yourself.
I'm literally rolling my eyes more than you can imagine. She talks about how Natalia used to be a respected veteran, but her glow burned out a long time ago. She's corrupted. Then Nikki was talking about how she didn't know what Carmella's deal was, but she's been attacking her ever since she debuted on SmackDown. So they're basically going to go after those two in a tag team match later on tonight. Then we get Renee Young talking to Dolph Ziggler, pre-match promo about the match with Miz. At the end, he kind of says, hit my music. Then we get the match, obviously, with The Miz and Dolph Ziggler, which I think was actually the best match of their series so far. I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was... I think what I liked about it was I really sensed desperation from Dolph Ziggler, that he had to win it. You know, there was a point where he put a submission on, which I don't know if he was attempting a crossface chicken wing or what. I don't know what he was doing.
It looked almost like he was going for the coquina clutch.
Yeah, yes, it did. Wow. But it just felt like one of those things where he was just like, he was so desperate that he didn't know what he was doing. So he was just like dry humping him basically. And it wasn't getting him anywhere. And I liked the story of it. You know, I am a sucker for the heel manager getting kicked out of the arena.
Oh yeah.
It's just always been a thing I love. So I loved that. And then I loved that The Miz
about that, Maryse's timing is great.
She's very much on point. And what I love about Maryse is, and this is what I said a long time ago about the women's divisions, is there can be women who are wrestlers and there can be women who are valets. It's fine to have separation, you know?
Yeah, no, it's fine to have separation. I mean, would I love to see Maryse in a match at some point? I think it'd be kind of cool. If they could,
she can go.
Yeah, she can absolutely go. So it's always kind of there waiting in the wings. Like, if you need it, right? Like, if you want to mix up the worlds.
And you know, obviously this reference dates me tremendously. But in 1993, Shawn Michaels was the Intercontinental Champion. And he used to always either get disqualified or counted out or do something to keep his title. And I kind of love that that's what The Miz does. You know, like he's a heel, you know, and The Miz is never going to be the heel that's like the killer wrestler, even though he's a lot better recently actually than he's ever been. But like, I love that The Miz will easily, if he has to, cheat to win. Like, he doesn't care.
Oh yeah, he just wants to win and he wants to keep the title.
Keep the title, keep the fame. That's what it's all about. That's his story. And he uses Maryse whenever he can, uses any tools that he can to win. And I'm really digging it, and I find myself desperate for him to keep the title because I love the Miz story, and I just want it to keep going.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. And I think one of the things I really like about the Miz and Maryse pairing as well is that they're so on the same page, and it seems like that would be boring, but it really, really works. Because if you think about like when the Miz was with Alex Riley, he always treated Alex Riley like shit because Alex Riley is Alex Riley, right? Like, nobody cares. So they were never going to be on the same level. With Maryse, she's supporting her husband And it doesn't feel like he's just using her as an object. It feels like they're together in this. Like, it feels like Maurice is very much supporting him so that, you know, she benefits from this too. She gets more money if he is the champion. She loves her husband. They're a great pair. Like, it just kind of comes down to them supporting each other. But they're such dicks about it. And they're such dicks to everyone else because they're so self-centered, right? But it's not going to cause dissension between the two of them because that's not a story I want to see. Like, I don't want to see the Miz and Maurice on different pages or whatever. Like, we saw how that worked with Lana and Alexander Rusev back in days that we don't talk about that storyline very much because it's terrible, right? And it's the same with Miz and Maurice. I just think they're such a good pair and they're so good together. And Maurice is just, she does the valet thing or the manager thing or the whatever person thing. She does it so well in exactly the way Dana Brooke doesn't, right? Like, her timing is on point. If she needs to hide something from the referee, she hides it from the referee. But during this match, when she had to have the spray bottle up so that the referee saw it, she did it at exactly the right time and then just let it drop and was like, I wasn't doing anything at all, I promise. And it just, it looked really, really natural as that kind of thing can look, right? But the timing of it just worked. And so you can tell that she's good at what she does and that The Miz also has great timing with that kind of stuff because he knows how to work around it and everything. I don't know. I agree with you that I really, really liked this match. I don't know if it was better than their Backlash one for me or not, but it was probably on par. And I love The Miz still taunting Daniel Bryan and, you know, doing Daniel Bryan's kicks and the yes chant and all of that because it's just such
long
a
live the Miz.
Long live the Miz, basically. And Dolph Ziggler's promo beforehand where he's like, I need to prove to myself and to everyone else. And I was like, oh boy, who could care right now, Dolph Ziggler? Like,
I really pray they have an idea for him. Something's got to change. Something. Up next, we got Randy Orton against Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan lasted longer against Randy Orton than I thought he would.
Yeah.
And then he eventually ate an RKO. That was the end of it. Then the Wyatt buzzer sounded. It's funny, that noise used to bring joy into my life, and now it brings dread and boredom.
Eye rolling.
Ugh. He does a promo. I don't even care. I think the match is going to be good, but I think that it's just...
Speaking of needing a plan and speaking of nothing changing and speaking of not reacting properly and speaking of doing the same thing over and over, how many times is Bray Wyatt going to tell us that he is a god? And how many times is that going to make no sense because Randy Orton...
He's the most crap god ever.
He's the most crap god ever. Like, Randy Orton has had the upper hand this entire feud. The only time
I don't even know why they need to have a match. Like,
I don't know. Because the only time Randy Orton didn't have the upper hand was for that moment in the hallway when Bray Wyatt attacked him, right?
When he still managed
to come out, RKO Bray Wyatt, and have Bray Wyatt lose to Kane. So not only does Bray Wyatt and not only does Eric Rowan lose constantly or get beat up constantly by Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt can't even win against a third party, right? Like, you are the least effective god in the world. And then after Eric Rowan gets beaten by Randy Orton, I'm actually kind of annoyed about this week. Like, Bray Wyatt just sits there and claps and is like, ha ha ha, Randy, I'm not like other men, blah, 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 I'm a god. You are, A, the worst mentor because you're clapping after Randy Orton just beat your friggin' protege. And then also, you're like, I'm so above you, run away. And Randy Orton's probably just rolling his eyes being like, why the fuck would I run away when I keep beating you and your family? In what universe does that mean I need to run away?
Well, I think you've nailed that segment, Sandra. You've nailed exactly what we all think about that. Up next, we get Carmella and Natalya against Nikki Bella. And the match basically went like 30 seconds because Natty was putting Nikki in the sharpshooter, but Carmella pulled her out of the ring. There was assaults at ringside. The match called it off after 30 seconds. I feel like what happened here, and I'm only basing this on when I was watching it, is that when started to come in it, because obviously I watched SmackDown after the fact, so like, you know, when you watch it and you know how long's left, like the timer tells you how long's left, and I knew that we had Ambrose and Cena in the main event, and I was like, how the fuck are they gonna do a women's match right now, like, timing wise so I think it was just one of those ones that timing got the better of them in this one. I'm not too annoyed about it because, you know, it's not that this happens every week and it is the secondary feud on SmackDown, So I think that they can handle doing it next week. It's not, I mean, it's not ideal, but it didn't bother me that much. But I'm curious to know if it bothered you and how you felt about it.
What bothered me about it was not the length of the match, and it wasn't the story that was being told. It was the laziness with which all of that was executed.
Well, I mean, I guess sometimes if you don't know, like I assume that they only realized, like, as they were about to go out, fuck, like, you guys, like, I mean, it was a case they either had to cut it or they had to just send them out and do something in 30 seconds, and they just made an on-the-fly decision. I'm not trying to defend it as if it's some sort of creative genius, because it's not.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you have to cut something really, really short, and this, I mean, this was a segment that was way too short for what they were trying to accomplish, but it could have been accomplished better, because what ended up happening was Carmella, like, Natalia has Nikki Bella in the sharpshooter. Carmella drags Nikki Bella out, which, you know, in terms of trying to win a tag team match, doesn't make any sense, which is addressed on Talking Smack. Like, Carmella had a reason for doing this, which I appreciate they're actually addressing that. But the problem is that Carmella pulls Nikki Bella out of the ring, throws her into the barricade, and they ring the bell immediately. They didn't wait for a count out. They didn't have Carmella, like, cheat with a chair or cheat with something. There was no reason for that to be a disqualification. They just rang the bell and it was just done. So that's what bothered me about it, was just, like, that's not a disqualification in any other match. I mean, like, during Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, that happened. Like, you get thrown into guardrails sometimes during matches. That's not a disqualification. It doesn't matter if you're a woman. Like, that's still not a disqualification.
Yeah. No, I see where you come from.
So, I mean, that was lazy. And that's not necessarily me ranting because it's a women's segment that got cut short. It was just a lazy segment overall. I just really didn't like it. But, I mean, it is a secondary story. And stories, maybe? Like, do Naomi and Natalia have issues now, too? Because it seems like they do. I don't know. Like, is that going to play out? That could be kind of cool, I guess, if we have kind of a third story going on. I don't know how it's all going to play together. It seems like they're still working out some of the kinks, and Nikki Bella and Carmella are obviously the primary part of the secondary part of the women's division. I don't know. This was clunky and it really didn't do anything for me because it didn't make any sense.
Then AJ Styles did an interview backstage where he basically said he was going to watch Ambrose and Cena tear each other apart, and he was going to soak it all in at ringside. So yeah, he said he was going to soak it all in, and then we got the main event, John Cena, Dean Ambrose, and so I've not seen Talking Smack, okay?
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to see it. I only got a chance to see the Ambrose bit, and what I will say is I think Dean Ambrose has improved dramatically since he lost the championship. I don't know why him not having a title makes him infinitely less annoying, but it seems to be the case for me anyway. I really enjoyed him in this match, minus the do-si-do. And the fact that he beat John Cena clean was very shocking to me. I did not expect that. And I actually thought his promo on Talking Smack was really good, because him talking about him, you know, main eventing every night and stuff, and him being the go-to guy, I like that. And if they can somehow swing that into a narrative that is consistent, then I'm going to be on board with it. But I'm very surprised that John Cena lost clean on SmackDown to Dean Ambrose.
I did not expect that at all. At all. And it was odd because it was kind of anticlimactic in a way. Because it was just sort of a flash roll-up. Like, Dean Ambrose counters the AA into a roll-up and then pins John Cena clean for the first time on television in, like, 7 years. That John Cena's gotten pinned clean on television. I mean, he's, you know, been cheated against or whatever, but this is the first time in like 7 years that John Cena has taken a clean pinfall loss on Raw or SmackDown. And it seemed so throwaway to me. And it was just very strange. Like, I wasn't really sure how to process it, because I almost kind of found myself going, was this the right decision? And how often have we clamored for John Cena to be humanized and for John Cena to be kind of like brought down to a human level? And I think that that's actually what they're doing. John Cena is human now. John Cena can lose. John Cena can actually take a loss, and John Cena actually faces trials and tribulations. And my guess is that they're building John Cena up for a 16th title reign, but they want to have some doubt in our minds before that happens, right? They're actually adding drama because humanizing John Cena, and this is what I really like about this. I mean, I'm still not the biggest fan of Dean Ambrose. I think he's gotten better, but the jury's still out for me to see how consistent he remains. Like, if he can settle into a consistent character from week to week and build something on that, I'll be fine with, you know, letting go of some of my misgivings about the character. I'm still not a huge fan of him in matches. This was like a match of wacky face guys, right? Like, John Cena making wacky faces and Dean Ambrose making wacky faces and Dean Ambrose's crazy flailing arm punches and stuff. I'm just not gonna ever be a big fan of that. But, like, humanizing John Cena here, though, I really do like, because it actually builds drama for the triple threat. I don't think John Cena will win the championship here, like, coming up, because he's going to be leaving to film a TV show. The timing doesn't seem right. Like, why would you do a triple threat and then have him win that way? It wouldn't make any sense. But it seems like they're building drama for when he actually does have a one-on-one match for the title. And in the eventuality that he wins it, I think the drama is going to be better if he is humanized a little bit more. And if we're not just going, oh, how are they going to protect John Cena against this loss? Because now it's like, maybe John Cena could lose something. Maybe he could lose on an episode of television. That's a lot more interesting, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Dean Ambrose does deserve some credit for what he's done since Backlash. But you are right. There needs to be consistency to it. And hopefully that's what they do. But overall, I mean, the build towards the No Mercy show is pretty good. And they've done a good job of making me care about the women's match and the title match, for sure. And yeah. I do think Orton and Wyatt will be good, regardless. Where would you give this show? Thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, or thumbs down?
I'd say thumbs up, but we didn't really talk about AJ Styles attacking.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So AJ Styles at the end, obviously, comes in. It seems like he just darted out of nowhere from the crowd.
Out of the crowd because he jumped the barrier, right?
Yeah, so he jumped the barrier, did the punch on Cena. Then he ran into the ring and did the pele kick on Ambrose. And the thing about AJ Styles is I just love him more and more every week.
He's so good.
What did you think of the attack and the whole post-match thing?
I loved it, actually. Like, I think it was just kind of perfect dickhead AJ Styles. And then Daniel Bryan coming out to say that Dean Ambrose is going to get his one-on-one rematch on SmackDown next week. It seems kind of strange, but again, the something I appreciate about SmackDown right now is that it's paying attention to itself and it's explaining things. And it's explaining a lot of things on the SmackDown show itself. And then if you do watch Talking Smack, Daniel Bryan explains, you know, Dean Ambrose deserves a one-on-one rematch. And I think it's good for these things to happen on SmackDown Live because that makes the television more interesting. And it shouldn't just always happen on a pay-per-view. And I promised him that he would have this match, so it doesn't make sense to do the triple threat and then have Dean Ambrose have his one-on-one rematch. Like, that seems out of order, so I'm doing it this way. And Daniel Bryan, as a general manager, explained his logic and explained his reasoning. And I appreciate that SmackDown is paying attention to the details, right? Because I think I said on the show, Dean Ambrose was promised a one-on-one rematch by Shane McMahon. Like, when is that going to happen? Are they going to do anything with that? SmackDown mm-hmm. answered that question this week. So it seems like we can actually start trusting them a little bit to start telling us stories and to build on things week to week and to talk about these details. And that's just something I really appreciate. So, and I mean, as far as AJ Styles goes, I want him to stay the champion. I want him to stay the champion for a long time. He's the face that runs the place. He's the champ that runs the camp. And I mean, I loved his promo backstage with Renee where he was basically saying he was way better than Dean Ambrose. He's way better than John Cena. He's beaten them both. He is amazing. I couldn't agree more. I love you, AJ Styles, and I love that you're such a smarmy dickhead, and
nobody does it better.
Please stay a smarmy dickhead for a long, long time.
Do you know what's funny about AJ Styles is that when he came to WWE, it kind of seemed like, oh, you know, will he be able to do promos? Will people be comfortable enough with him in the microphone? And now I have like every faith in him that he can do everything. Like, yeah. I just have no problems. I believe that he can do anything.
Because it seemed like that's a lot of what I heard about AJ Styles was he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, but he can't talk. And now he's in WWE, and you know, people tell me that this has kind of been a recent development, that AJ Styles has gotten this good on the microphone and gotten this good at having a personality, that's awesome. It's awesome that he's fit in so well here and thrived, right? Like, he's been in WWE less than a year, and he's the WWE World Champion, and he's killing it every single week. So I don't know. I think that's really great. Lots of props to him.
Definitely. And I would give it a thumbs up as well this week. So there we go. There you have the SmackDown summary. Please join us this Friday for the inaugural edition of the Retro Raw Rundown, Sondra. We're going to go back 20 years.
We are.
Every week to talk about Monday Night Raw. Talk a little bit about how you felt about this being pitched to you and why you agreed to do it and how you feel about it going forward as a weekly project looking back at 20 years ago WWF.
Well, it's interesting because, and I wasn't expecting to talk about this right now, but yeah, it's interesting because, so this past week on Twitter, apparently people, I didn't realize that not liking The Undertaker was so controversial. And there were people on Twitter this weekend that actually were kind of like debating the validity of my fandom and saying that I don't care about anything pre-2010, and there were some people saying, like, I just don't know if she cares about history or if she's seen anything older or if she, you know, even respects all of that stuff. And the weird thing is, like, I have seen a lot of older wrestling. I have gone back and watched plenty of stuff. Some stuff with you, actually, when I was over, like, at your flat. You know, you showed me a bunch of old ECW and WWF and all sorts of things.
The thing is, I love that you say, you showed me a bunch of old wrestling. I showed you Vince versus Stephanie in an I Quit match.
Yes.
That's the stuff that I showed you.
And some of the Paul Heyman stuff and sure, other sure. things. And then you were like, Sandra, you pick a match, but it can't be NXT. And I was like, what do I do?
How do I compute with this request?
I don't understand. But so this was a really weird conversation on Twitter that was going on without me because I was at work and couldn't actually respond to any of it. And I just, the idea kind of came out of that conversation between you and some other people that, you know, Sandra hasn't necessarily seen everything that, you know, you watched when you were younger or that a lot of people watched growing up. And so I'm not doing this because I think I have to validate my wrestling fandom and that I think I have to do homework in order to be a wrestling fan. I kind of, like, it doesn't really bother me that much if people want to talk about me on Twitter. Like, it actually really doesn't bug me that much. But I do get kind of annoyed when people are questioning the validity of my fandom based on the fact that I haven't seen everything that they've seen that they like.
I think a lot of it is tongue-in-cheek, though, to be fair.
Like, yeah,
I think
yeah,
the
yeah.
majority of it is. I think the thing, and I'm just speaking for people, I think the thing that they probably are just very not used to is the fact that you know when you reference things from history, it is the last 5 years because
yeah.
that's when you watched. So for me, like when I was thinking about doing it, I've wanted to do a sort of go back and look at old wrestling for a while, but it's just, you know, how to do it, when to do it.
Well, and we've talked about it in the past. Like, it would be fun for, you know, you to show me old women stuff or to show me an old episode of Raw and talk about it. And instead of doing an old episode, we're doing all of the old episodes.
Well, because the problem is it's very hard to show you one thing.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have the context of it. And then the episode that we're starting with this Friday is it's a really interesting episode to start. You know, Mind Games has just happened. Shawn Michaels is the WWF champion. Bret Hart's on hiatus. Rocky Maivia hasn't even debuted yet. Steve Austin's on the rise. Jim Ross turns heel.
It's so strange. Like, I cannot wait to talk about all of this, actually. And I think part of the reason I agreed to do it and part of what I think is going to be so fun about this is, like, I kind of get the idea that maybe I come across wrong when I'm talking about older stuff. Like, I mean, even when I was talking to you, you were like, you might enjoy this more than you think. It seems like people think that I'm not going to enjoy old wrestling because I have it, like, in my head that old wrestling is bad and new wrestling is good. That's not it. It's just there's so much wrestling in the world to watch. And so when I say that I haven't gone back to watch a lot of older stuff, it's because there's also so much newer stuff. Like, I'm always watching NXT. I'm always watching Lucha Underground. I'm not going to skip those shows. Like, I'm not going to make time to do history lessons and skip those. Like, I want to watch Chikara. I need to catch up on Chikara before I go to their shows in December, you know, and I haven't had a lot of time to do that. So it's not that I'm dead set against old wrestling and I think it's all going to be terrible. It's just there's so much wrestling and there's so much wrestling ongoing. That said, I do like old wrestling because I like wrestling a lot. Like, I know that I'm already a big fan of Kurt Angle. I love Edge and Christian. I love, you know...
We're a couple of years off that, mate.
I know we're a few, couple of years off that, but I'm saying, like, there are things that I like from the past. And so I'm sure I'll find bizarre, weird things to like in any era of wrestling. I think it'll be fun. And I think it's important to bring a perspective to the discussion. This is part of the thing I'm interested in, too, right? Like, I'm not watching it in 1996. I'm watching it in 2016. Does it hold up? Does it not?
There's three reasons that I thought we should do it. Number one, and this is not meant to be patronizing, even if it sounds it does, I don't really think that you've had a chance in a real time to watch a long-term successful storyline play out. I think the WWE have not really been able to do that very well in the last couple of years.
What about Bayley?
Bayley's been great, yeah, so that's maybe the one. That's probably the one, you know, because the Daniel Bryan one was kind of by accident. But I just think it would be good for you to see a long period of time where there are stories that pay off over a year or two, you know, and there's actually reactions to that positively when it's supposed to happen. I also think that me watching it back now and how I feel about it now, and then you watching it for the first time is a kind of fun dynamic of how that's going to work. And then the third one is I just think there's going to be a load of bonkers characters that you just find hysterical.
I'm pretty excited about that. There's already one on on this episode that we're going to discuss.
I dread. It'll be great. I'm looking forward to it. And then we'll probably have to figure out what we're going to do, because obviously there's going to be pay-per-views that Sondra might have to kind of check them out to kind of... Well, I mean, you don't have to, but it might be beneficial to watch some of them to kind of understand. Well, I mean, either that or you're going to get those still clips every month.
I'll get the still clips. I can listen to New Generation Project podcast and the Attitude Era podcast.
There you go.
Which, again, yes, I do have some historical context because I listen to those shows, all of them.
There you go. So with that in mind, please join us on Friday for the Retro Raw Rundown. We'll be back next week with... a review of Clash of Champions, new Raw Rundown, new SmackDown Summary, another Retro Raw Rundown. I, at some point, will try and get out the house.
There's so much wrestling. There's so much wrestling. I didn't even talk about NXT, and I meant to talk about NXT.
Well, we will talk about NXT... We'll maybe do a roundup next week or something.
That would be good. Because, it was mentioned to me on Twitter, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm really sorry. I can't call out who was mentioning this to me. It's very cool to see Samoa Joe reacting to a loss right now and beating up Shinsuke Nakamura and, like, being a really good character. That's one of the really cool things that's going on in NXT. So I think doing a roundup soon is a very good idea.
Indeed. So where can people find you on Twitter, Sondra?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes.
There you go. Thank you very much for listening to the SmackDown summary. And I think we accurately summarized SmackDown.
Are we doing that now?
No, I don't like it.
Let's not. Let's not do that at all.
That fucking American. Bye. Southern boys with the farmer strength. Ain't nobody man enough to feel the pain. And you could be next, you better give respect. Cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No, they don't want.